We're joined by Arden Zwelling from the At the Letters podcast and Sportsnet.ca. Arden, how are you, man?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Good to chat with you. Let's start with the news of the day. Freddie Galvis no longer a Toronto Blue Jay. There seems to be a corner of the Blue Jays fan base where no matter what move is made, there is finger-pointing and screaming about Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro. Is there tangible reason to be upset with Galvis going to the Reds via waivers and not being moved at the deadline?
No, there's not. And I mean, you put it well, right? You know, these guys sneeze the wrong way, and there's a segment of the fan base that's going to be upset with them. Rightfully so, because the team's not winning, and fans just want to see their team win, and they want to have players that they are familiar with and they recognize and that they can get behind. So it's very understandable. But you know, when it comes to Freddie Galvis being moved out via waivers, it just made sense for the Blue Jays to open up more playing time for Bo Bichette and Kevin Biggio, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. even at third base, and to not have this kind of awkward rotation every day where Freddie Galvis is, you know, Charlie Montoya was wanting to get him in the lineup as much as possible, and that's coming at the sacrifice of playing time for some of the young players. The Blue Jays are trying to get reps in the big leagues right now. It makes sense for Freddie Galvis as well because he deserves to play every day. He's been a solid major leaguer for a lot of years now, and he had a fine first half for the Blue Jays, kind of slowed down a little bit over the last little while, but he really got this team through a period in April when it was not performing offensively at all. He also provided some pretty solid defense up the middle. So he gets a chance to go play every day as a shortstop, which is good for him.
Yeah, and so the thought would be, well, geez, go get some assets from at the deadline. But it sounded like there was an attempt to do that with very underwhelming interest, at least in terms of the assets coming back. While there might be a lot of teams that, sure, we'll take a Freddie Galvis, there wasn't anyone that wanted to, I guess, hand over prospects of value. Is that a fair assertion of what went down?
Yeah, no, my understanding is the Blue Jays didn't get a single concrete offer for Freddie Galvis of a, hey, here's actually something that a team will do. I think the Blue Jays shopped Freddie Galvis at the deadline and tried to find suitors, and there just wasn't a market out there for him. I don't think a single shortstop, or at least a major league shortstop, moved at the trade deadline. So clearly there just weren't buyers out there that were interested in acquiring a guy like Freddie Galvis. And, you know, it also says something that he got far enough through the waivers process that, you know, Cincinnati was the team that claimed him. So it really was just, you know, a situation where the Blue Jays did what's best for them right now, what's best for Freddie right now. And, you know, I'm sure Cincinnati's hoping what's best for them.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, let's move along. How about the Bo Bichette story? This is the greatest MLB debut, at least for an opening 15 games, I'd think, with all the records he's already set in a fortnight.
Yeah, Bo's been remarkable. And, you know, of course there's going to be a slowdown. You know, nobody is going to hit that well for that long. And, you know, there's probably going to be some over 10 stretches at some point here. I think he had an 0-for-7 stretch, you know, over the weekend where pitchers are starting to figure him out a little bit and are starting to figure out how to pitch to him and where the holes are in his swing. And even just, you know, from a luck standpoint, his batting average on balls in play was up here like 500, which is, you know, not something that's sustainable at all. Eventually, you know, even if you keep hitting the ball in the screws and barreling the ball, sometimes you hit it right at the fielder, or sometimes you know, teams have positioned you according to your tendencies based on your spray chart, and you start hitting the ball into shifts. So, you know, that's baseball, isn't it? The adjustments and the cat and mouse game. Bo Bichette's gonna have to play that over the couple of weeks, but yeah, look, you can't ask for a better start than he had. And I think the Blue Jays would like to just see from him going forward just a good plate approach, you know, regardless of the results. They want to see him laying off of bad pitches. They want to see him not expanding the zone. They want to see him getting to pitches he can hit that are on the plate, just like with any player. But, I mean, that's the approach that they want to see from him, and I'm sure they want him to maintain at the same time his aggressiveness, which is what, you know, allows him to barrel the ball so hard, is because he really attacks some of the pitches that he gets. It's just about selecting the right ones to go after.
I believe he's reached safely in all 14 Major League Baseball games. What surprised you about what he's shown with, obviously, the prior mentioned disclaimer that this is tiny sample size, but anything about watching him play day to day, you're like, oh, geez, I didn't expect this.
Honestly, I haven't been surprised at all because, like, I've followed Bo Bichette basically since he was drafted, and I've written a number of big stories about him, and I spent time with him in Lansing and in Dunedin and in New Hampshire, even in Buffalo as well. So, you know, I've been watching him play for a long time, and I've gotten to know a lot about him and his upbringing and, you know, just how he got to where he is now as a 21-year-old in the big league. So I always thought that this kid was going to step in and have success right away, because even when he was, you know, 19, you know, or even 18, when I would talk to him, and I always came away thinking, like, this kid's a pro, you know, this kid gets it. And when your dad's Dante Bichette and he's been throwing you major league batting practice since you were like 12, and you've been going out to Coors Field with him during the summers to take BP at Coors Field as a 15-year-old and hit balls up onto the concourse and spend time around a big league environment and just have major leaguers around you at all times, and to have a major league dad who's that invested in you and your life, you would learn things pretty quickly and pick things up pretty quickly and be very prepared for what's awaiting you when you yourself get to the majors. So I really haven't been that surprised that he's stepped in and looked like he belongs.
Take us back to the draft where he was selected, because I believe it was early in the Shapiro Atkins reign, but the draft was still a lot of Anthopoulos folks, and there was a thought by some organizations that that swing needed a major overhaul, and correct me if I'm wrong, but those pre-draft conversations, the ones with the Blue Jays were the ones where they were willing to accept what other people saw as holes in the swing, or I guess, you know, potential pitfalls of playing baseball the way he does. Is that, give us more on that if you can.
Yeah, there's a lot of organizations that did not like his swing at all. And I mean, you can even see it sometimes in games now when he misses. I mean, he nearly falls over. And it's not something that you would teach a young player to do. And, you know, it works for him. And the Blue Jays' development philosophy under Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins is to let players be individuals and to let them, you know, do whatever it is that makes them good as long as it continues to work. You know, when it stops working, that's when you have to say, okay, maybe we need to change something here. Maybe we need to address something here. But like Bo Bichette hit like 400 every level of the minor leagues on his way up. So, you know, you can't really tell a guy who's having that kind of success, hey, you need to change this and change that. But I think that on draft night, a lot of teams passed on him because of the swing, also because of signability concerns. Because he told a number of teams, like, I just don't want to join your organization. I'm going to go to college and I'm going to keep, you know, developing, getting the most out of my career. And I'm going to re-enter the draft as probably a really high draft pick next time around. So, you know, even when the Blue Jays got him, I think it was 66th overall in the second round, you know, the Blue Jays almost didn't sign him. You know, originally he didn't like their signing bonus offer and he said, no, like, I'm good. You know, I'll go to college. And the Blue Jays had to actually come back and improve their bonus in order to get him. And they went over slot to get him, and I think that's why a lot of teams, you know, when teams say signability concerns, that's, well, this guy isn't going to take our money, or we're not going to have enough of our draft pool available in order to sign him. So I think that's why a lot of teams ended up passing on him. But, you know, if you could re-rank that draft now, that 2016 draft, I mean, Bo Bichette is one of the top names to go off the board.
Yeah, well, it's a great story of how close he was to not being a Blue Jay in many ways, and now he's up and setting major league records and getting on base with relative ease despite never playing at the level. He's been a big part of this club's resurgence in this second half of the season. They're actually 20-20 over the last 40 games, and if you were to say that, you know, Marcus Stroman wasn't going to be around for a significant chunk of those, they got maybe two good Aaron Sanchez starts in there, and that they sold some other assets at the deadline, 20-20 is like 500 is incredibly respectable for this group at this juncture, is it not?
And they might still lose 100 games. You know,
that's, yeah, I guess
they were. That's how bad they were earlier in the season. You know, that's how tough it was. You know, for them through April and May in particular, and there was a, you know, a bit of a turning point in June where you know, the Blue Jays went through Boston and New York. And I think they went, you know, 2-4 on the trip. Like, it, you know, it really wasn't, you know, great from a results standpoint, but the games were all tight and the Blue Jays were in all of them, you know, and they were losing by one run or two runs. They weren't getting blown out. And then I think from there, you know, that's kind of when some of the winnings, you know, some of these things started to turn. And part of it, it must be said, is that the Blue Jays have had series recently against the Baltimore Orioles and against the Kansas City Royals and against the Detroit Tigers. Like, they've had series against teams that are way, way more in the rebuild wilderness than the Blue Jays are. So the Blue Jays can reliably beat up on those teams. But, you know, even in the last week, we see them split a four-game series with the Yankees, see them take two out of three against Tampa Bay Rays. Those are the best two teams in the AL East. So the Blue Jays are now competing with really, really good clubs. And a lot of it has been thanks to the offense and thanks to the young kids we've been talking about who have come in and just been hitting the hell out of the ball. A lot of it's been thanks to Teoscar Hernandez being on fire for like a month, Randall Grichuk coming around, Brandon Drury very quietly having a nice offensive, you know, last 30 days or so. So a lot of the offense has really come around to the club, and they've been playing a lot better baseball recently. But as I alluded to, at the end of the season, it's still not going to be a really pretty win-loss record.
Yeah, fair enough. Tell us about Jacob Wegesback. He was seemingly a lottery ticket they got in return for Aaron Loop a year ago. And now is, you got to wonder if the starting rotation doesn't involve this guy next year because he's been that good in a few of these starts.
Yeah, I mean, that trade is already a win. You know, Aaron Loop, Loogie, one, you know, a lefty versus lefty guy, and you turn him into a, you know, Jacob Wegesback who's made now, you know, seven or eight starts in the starting rotation. And or recently, I guess, not a start because he's been pitching behind an opener recently, but a guy who's been doing very well. And he's not going to blow you away. He's not going to have, you know, premier velocity, and he's not going to have a curveball that's going to, you know, make your hat spin. But he is going to throw four or five pitches, and he's going to locate them very well, and he's going to cut the ball, and he's going to sink it. He's going to change speeds and change locations around the zone. It's going to be very Jay Happ-ish or Marco Estrada-ish. Not overpowering stuff, but a real good feel for pitching, a real good feel for how to locate his stuff and to just move the ball just off the barrel of the bat, because it doesn't take much to get the ball off the barrel of the bat and generate weak contact and get ground balls or, you know, lazy fly balls. And it's a, you know, it's a dangerous game to play in today's MLB where the ball is so clearly juiced, and, you know, ballparks seem to be playing smaller than ever. And so if the ball's in play, bad things tend to happen in MLB today. That's why clubs really value high strikeout arms right now, because you just eliminate that luck aspect of it. But yeah, the fact that the Blue Jays have gotten a guy who's taken reliable turns in their rotation and been solid and thrown quality starts in exchange for Aaron Loop, it's clearly a win. And we'll see how he continues to develop going forward.
So let's try to spitball a bit. I mean, clearly you look around the diamond and many of the, you know, nine or ten, if I guess whether you count a DH or not, I guess the nine hitting positions are pretty much spoken for moving forward, minus an opportunity here or there, be it a corner outfielder, DH / first baseman. But the rotation, I mean, I don't know that, is there a sure thing? Is there a guy you can count on? And maybe there's a certain bit of that that's just the nature of the position, but my goodness, there's a lot of ifs and ands and buts and question marks, and should they go sign a guy now? I mean, how would you describe the 2020 rotation right now?
Yeah, incomplete. Yeah, I think definitely something that needs to be addressed in the offseason via free agency. You know, I think that really this coming offseason, the Blue Jays need to move out of shopping in that low tier of reclamation projects or bounce backs, you know, Clay Buchholz types or Matt Shoemaker types or Jaime Garcia types. I think they need to aim higher. And I think they need to try to get a Zach Wheeler or try to get an Alex Wood. You know, I doubt that the Blue Jays are going to be players for someone like Gerrit Cole or even Dallas Keuchel. Like, I think that would probably be a little too rich for their blood and where they are in the rebuild right now. But why not commit to a Zach Wheeler for 4 years? You know, a guy who's like 28, 29, really, really solid when healthy, has injury concerns, but which pitcher doesn't? And a guy who, you know, even if you don't contend for a division title in 2020, a guy who will still be under contract and you would presume effective come 2021 and 2022 when you're really looking to be good and really looking to be getting the most out of what is a very promising young position player core. So, you know, if I'm the Blue Jays, I'm going out and I'm getting like two of those guys. And then I'm, you know, maybe getting one Matt Shoemaker type, like a bounce back guy. And then I'm leaving two spots in my rotation open for, you know, Trent Thornton and Wegesback and Thomas Pannone and Sean Foley and Anthony Kay and whoever else, you know, TJ Zoic, Nate Pearson, to all compete for in spring training. And I'm loading up my AAA rotation with some of my young homegrown pitching that can step in when inevitably somebody at the major league level gets hurt or somebody underperforms.
Yeah, I think it was early July when the Blue Jays set a new club record for players that had started a baseball game as a pitcher. Like, that's, yeah, you're going to need more than five. There's no doubt about that. What would you say the ETA is on Nate Pearson? He's now the top prospect in the organization now that Bo Bichette is up. And I last check in MLB's pipeline top 100, there's only one pitcher above him, and it was the guy that went 1-1 a couple of years ago, I think, to Detroit.
Yeah, he's a special arm, Nate Pearson, and he's having just a remarkable season. You know, you can't forget that he missed almost all of 2018. Fortunately, not with a ligament issue or a labrum issue. It was a broken bone in his arm, but he barely pitched in 2018. So the Blue Jays are just being, you know, they're going to be very conservative with his innings total this year. And I think that's a primary reason why you won't see him in the majors at all this season, because I think the Blue Jays are just going to carefully manage his innings and leave him in the minor leagues. You know, it's when you get those big innings jumps, when you go from, you know, I don't know, 100 in 1 year to 150 in the next year, a lot of the time you see injuries, and a lot of time you see workload, and you see the tax that takes on guys' arms, and it can screw them up for a while. So I think the Blue Jays are going to be very, very cautious there. But that said, I think Nate Pearson is a guy who has to factor in 2020. I don't think the Blue Jays should or will leave him in the minors for all of 2020. Maybe he starts in Buffalo and gets a, you know, 3-4 outings there just to get his feet on him, and he hasn't even touched that level yet. So you want to test him against that level of competition. But I think that by May, June 2020, Nate Pearson, if healthy and if effective, should be in the majors. He's a guy who throws 100 miles an hour, often higher than 100 miles an hour. And that's something that could impact the Blue Jays in a very big way, and something that they should, you know, not mess around with and should bring to the majors when ready.
Last one for you. Take us back to the final at-bat of yesterday's finale of a four-game set with the Yankees, as the top closer in the game squared off with the number one prospect in baseball heading into the season.
Oh, man. This might have been my favorite plate appearance of the season right there. I mean, that stands out. You know, that's Troy Tulowitzki versus Andrew Miller, right? Like, that was really, really cool. You wish there was, you know, something on the line for the Blue Jays when that's
right.
happening, right? You wish it was, you know, oh, the Blue Jays are a game behind the Yankees for the division lead or something, and not 25 games under 500 or whatever they are. But I think as a Blue Jays fan, you just hope that that was like a preview of what is to come in future seasons, when this team, they hope and the fans hope, are more competitive than they have been to this point. And I think that, you know, for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to come off the bench and do that, like, it's one thing if you've been playing all day, and if this is your fourth plate appearance or whatever, and you've been in the field, but to come off the bench cold, having just sat there for the previous however many hours, and come in and face a guy throwing 100 and put up that kind of plate appearance, I think that's pretty special. And it's, you know, that's why, you know, when he was coming up through the minors, people said, this is a generational talent. Like, this is a different kind of hitter. This guy is beyond his years. We forget he's 20. He's 20 years old, you know, like the average 20-year-old is in like low A right now across affiliated baseball. And he's here in the majors facing Aroldis Chapman and putting up an incredible plate appearance. And then even, you know, it gets a little bit overshadowed, but Bo Bichette had a really nice plate appearance too. So, you know, if you're a Blue Jays fan, it's something to dream on. You know, you obviously hope that this club can figure out its pitching in the coming years, so that, you know, this great young position player core isn't wasted.
Schedule came out today. Will we see you in Seattle late July next year?
I imagine you'll see Shai Davidi.
You've got to start lobbying, man.
I'm too low on the depth chart.
I'm telling you.
That would be great.
You got to sprinkle something in his food 2 weeks ahead of time or something. I kid. Thank you, Arden. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it, man. Take it easy.
See you, man.